This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, if you had game two as to when Draymond Green would make news in the NBA playoffs, congratulations. You win the Draymond Green sweepstakes. The stomp heard around the NBA playoffs last night, but the Sacramento Kings beat the Golden State Warriors 114-106. They're up 2-0, but the series in a series until the home team loses, so we'll see what Golden State does at the Chase Center until maybe we have a tied series after four games, or maybe Sacramento might win this one quicker than we think. But the big story is Draymond Green and the stomp on Domantas Sabonis and his ejection from that game, and the NBA reviewing that film to determine whether or not a further suspension is warranted. We're going to get into that game. We're going to talk more about the Jalen Hurts contract for the Philadelphia Eagles, the winners and losers of that particular deal. And I think you're going knowing where a lot of people are going on the losers sentiment in terms of a certain quarterback in Baltimore. But the NBA playoffs had two games last night. One wasn't exactly dramatic as the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Brooklyn Nets 96-84. They are now up easily 2-0. They've handled Brooklyn relatively easy in the first two games of the series. They're going to go back to Brooklyn. Nobody really looked at the Nets and saw any real reason to believe that they would give Philadelphia any games in this series. But the Sacramento Golden State one was really interesting in the beginning of the playoffs because you had a Sacramento Kings team that was brand new to the postseason, young team that was filled with energy, guided by a veteran head coach who had gone to the finals as a head coach, who had been an assistant in Golden State for 6 years, and a Warriors team that was mediocre this season, mostly because they couldn't win games on the road. But then you get to the playoffs, and we sort of expect that there's a switch, and off they would go as the defending champions, because they still had, at the core of it, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green. But now they find themselves down 2-0 and may lose Draymond Green for game three coming up on Thursday night. Now, that's a big may because they'll review the film and they'll talk to the players and they'll analyze it pretty closely as to whether or not Draymond Green deserves a further suspension, like what happened when in 2016 when he was out for a game in that series against the Cavaliers. Now, What did we see last night? Well, we saw two guys fighting for the rebound. Sabonis slips, and while he's slipping, he does grab Draymond Green's foot. Now, according to Draymond Green, this is the second time in this series that it's happened, saying Malik Monk grabbed his foot in game number one. So Draymond Green's explanation for this is that his foot was grabbed. He had to plant his foot somewhere. He is not flexible enough to stretch it out. But it is clear when you watch the video that albeit Sabonis grabs a foot, once the foot is released, then there is a stomping mechanism by Draymond Green. He isn't just stepping. He is forcefully putting his foot down. I sense some aggravation there. Now, do I think that he gets suspended for one full game in this series? That I've gone back and forth with. I agree with the ejection. I absolutely think you need to be ejected in that situation. But I do think that when further analysis is needed on it, it's going to show that there was a grab of the ankle as Draymond was trying to move down the court, and that's as dangerous. That's a pretty dangerous play. But nevertheless, there was a stomp, and Draymond Green deserved to be ejected in the fourth quarter. Now, what they might say is, while it was pretty tight game going in, you know, into the latter, that happened about the midway point of the fourth quarter, that the second part of that, like once Draymond Green left, we were still in a back and forth game, that might have been penalty enough, but because of when it took place, that it may warrant a suspension of one game, because being out for the final few minutes of a regular game may not be enough for the NBA to say that was penalty enough, just leaving the final 6 minutes of a basketball game. But we'll see. I believe that in the end they won't do it. I just don't think it. Would I do it? I wouldn't do it. I would say, look, he got ejected. I'm not going to make a mountain out of a molehill here. I honestly think that Sabonis does has to be warned about grabbing an ankle on a player that's going another direction. There's no doubt about it. He did stomp and then forced his foot down forcefully on Sabonis. There's no question about that. But the reality of it is I don't think the NBA wants to take it as far as some people in Sacramento want them to take it. But in the end, it's Draymond being Draymond. Now, of course, Green did what he normally does, which is he soaked up the moment, getting on the table, looking at the crowd, responding to the jeers of the crowd, holding his hand up to his ear as if he couldn't hear them when they were raining down the boos and the chants and everything like that. It becomes a circus. That's what he does. It becomes a circus. Here's why I would be careful if I was Mike Brown in Sacramento. Mike Brown is aware of this as anybody. There is something about Draymond Green that riles up his team in a way that they rally around some of his antics. And I think if you're Mike Brown, you want to temper that as much as possible. You want to say, look, guys, he is trying to do something for his team. He is trying those antics that he has. Let's not get to us. We're up 2-0. We're going into a hostile place anyway. Let's not make it more hostile by allowing him to sort of letting him use that moment. Let's stay in our lane. Let's stay focused. Let's take this incident and push it behind us. Whether he gets suspended or not is not our deal. It's not our problem. Let's not make it a deal in the press. Let's not say we think that the ruling is right or the ruling is wrong. Let's just go and a different direction. And I think that's important in this series because, again, you can lose 2 on the road in the opening round of a series and still win this thing, right? They're going to go back to Sacramento for Game 5 if you win 1 at home. So if you get 1, if you're Golden State, you get 1, you know you're going back to Sacramento. So you didn't need to win one of the first 2 of the series in Sacramento. You just need to win 1 in Sacramento. And if you can force the return back to that city, then you can get it there. So this series is still not over because you can get momentum by winning 2 at home and then winning Game 5. If you're Sacramento, you're aware of that because you know how well they play at the Chase Center. This is a team that's lousy on the road, but fantastic at home. Here's one thing about this though. The Kings are a really good road team. In fact, they're second to Milwaukee in road record this year in the NBA. So Thursday night has a real interesting angle to it. But I think in the end, if you're Mike Brown, do not allow this incident to grow within the team. When the media starts poking around, asking for how people feel about this or feel about that, stay in your lane and stay focused on just the series. Let the NBA take care of what the NBA takes care of. But other than that, there's a couple of other things to note about this. One, the Golden State Warriors, they're in trouble in a way here that I can only put in the context of the first 2 of this series. I have no idea how they'll react in Game 3 in San Francisco. But Steph Curry is going to have to shoot better, and they're going to have to find a way to slow down De'Aaron Fox in the fourth quarter because he was magnificent again last night in the fourth quarter. The Kings are playing in a way that you want to see young, inexperienced teams play in the playoffs. Sometimes the lights get pretty bright, but in this situation, it doesn't feel like Sacramento is looking at this as brand new territory. They're looking at it as a continuation of the success that they've had in the regular season, especially at home. If they can hold this on to the Chase Center for Games 3 or 4, either one, then they're going to win this series. If they can split in San Francisco, they're going to win this series. If Golden State wins the next 2, it's game on, right? Because then you will lean towards the experience of the big three at Golden State in these kind of moments. But here's one thing that Steph Curry has never seen in his time in the NBA. He's never been down 0-2 in a playoff series. And now he finds himself down 0-2 against a young, very, very confident Sacramento team that is coached by the right man in Mike Brown, who's like, you know, you guys may not have experienced this, but I have experienced this, and we've got it. So what we thought was going to be a very intriguing series, just based on how good are Sacramento, how mediocre has Golden State been, and do they have that extra gear that will kick into the postseason? How much does winning NBA championships and being together and the continuity of this team and Andrew Wiggins coming back and all of those things, how is that going to play in to the way this series has played out? Well, so far, it has been fantastic for Sacramento to hold court in two games against the defending NBA champions that have been waiting for a long time to get to this moment in the first place. We're talking, what, 10 months of, like, just get me to the playoffs? Get me to the playoffs. And now that the playoffs are here, Sacramento has withstood two games against a team that has been gearing up to make another run at a championship. There's a lot of talk in Golden State about whether or not the ownership is going to keep this group of three together. Right, they've been asked all of these questions about the last dance scenario, right? Similar to the Bulls. And they all, you know, nobody knows what the contracts will be offered, of whether or not the luxury tax, the Golden State will continue to pay a luxury tax to make sure that those three guys are very, very well paid. So it's very likely that this thing is going to have to get broken up, if indeed Golden State doesn't want to spend the luxury tax on the kind of salaries that these guys are going to have on the books. But if you lose this series, you can guarantee that's not going to happen. So a win by this in this series and a win in future series by this Golden State team may convince ownership to say, yeah, let's do that. Let's keep this together as long as we possibly can. But if you lose to Sacramento in round one, I can almost guarantee you that the luxury tax bill that they have to pay based on those contracts is not going to be paid. All right, we'll continue. We'll get to Jalen Hurts' record-setting contract from yesterday. Some of the winners and losers will continue. Eric Hedholm will join us this hour as well on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, three more games in the NBA playoffs tonight. Boston and Atlanta. And then right after that, you've got Knicks Cavaliers. So you've got like two games going on almost the same time. There's like a half an hour difference between the two. And then later tonight, the only game that's on tonight is Phoenix versus the Clippers, as the Clippers are up 1-0 after getting game one in Phoenix. So those are the three games. Stanley Cup playoffs started last night. Boston won. There was a double overtime game last night, which was really, exciting, as Minnesota beat Dallas. Those games are – that's the one thing about the Stanley Cup playoffs that is pretty cool, is that the overtime isn't – they don't go to the shootout.
Nope.
They go, hey, if it goes to 4 a.m, it goes to 4 a.m. That's what we do. So stay
buckle
up with
up,
us.
Buckle up, kids.
Buckle up, kids. We're going to be up late. And by the way, you can't leave because every second – could be a change, a turning point.
Overtime playoff hockey is probably the best.
It is so intense.
I mean, you're at the edge of your seat. You don't know when a goal is going to come, because it could come in. It could come from somewhere on the opposite side of the ice.
It
you never know.
What I love about it is it's the best overtime that we have, because I've said many times, in the NFL, even when you have the playoff rule, you know, that allows teams to have two, you know, each team has a possession. Even if you're in a position where a team can win it, there's still a drive usually. You can have an interception return for a touchdown or something like that. But for the most part, you see a developing thing. Basketball's overtime is timed, so you have to wait till the very end to see what it is.
So what you're telling me is that Dallas, because Dallas didn't get a chance to tie it up, that the NHL's not going to change the rules?
Right. They're not going to change the rules. Exactly.
Interesting.
And in baseball, you know that the home team is going to bat last. So even if you get something at the top, you're going to have some way to answer it at the bottom. And in the bottom, you can sit and be on the edge of your seat. But in overtime NHL playoff hockey, you could have a goal in the first 10 seconds. You could have four overtimes. You have no idea when it's going to be, where it's going to come from. So that's pretty thrilling. So right off the bat, day one, they had two games in overtime. Edmonton blowing a lead, and the Kings won that one, and then the Minnesota Wild beat the Dallas Stars in double overtime. Boston, the perennial favorite to win the whole thing with 135 points, beat Florida 3-1. They said there was nerves. They battled nerves. I'm sure that calmed down once David Pastrnak scored his first goal of the game. Carolina beat the Islanders 2-1. So the playoffs are rolling right along. But the NFL continues to make news. We got a draft in a week. So on Thursday night, the 27th, so a week from Thursday, we got the NFL draft. That's going to go through the weekend. And then yesterday, Philadelphia made huge news by signing and agreeing to a deal with quarterback Jalen Hurts for $51 million annually. So 5 years, $255 million, with just over $179 million guaranteed. There's a no trade clause in this deal. That's the first in Eagles history. And Jalen Hurts now has generational wealth. By the way, that's a term that has not been used a lot for many years. And now it is being used all the time. This is really to describe the kind of money that athletes are getting. Like, you're just hearing it more and more and more, whether a player is going for generational wealth or is achieving a contract that will give him generational wealth. We heard it all last year with LIV, right? Once golfers were going to LIV and they were like, look, listen, I'm not as competitive on this as I used to be, but this gives me generational wealth. And now Jalen Hurts has it. And I agree with every pundit that in the last 24 hours has said the same talking point, which is this guy's life is a movie. It really is a movie. It's incredible. Like to be benched in the national championship game and then watch Tua Tagovailoa throw a touchdown as a freshman and realize I may have lost my job permanently here at Alabama. And staying at Alabama for one more year, deciding I'm not going to leave. Right. I'm going to stay, which, by the way, his choice. It's not the right choice, wrong choice. It was just his choice.
I think that's
I might have left.
And I think that's the most admirable part of his journey so far is that he did stay.
Yeah, but I don't want to say it's admirable because I don't want to give the perception that I think staying when you have other options is a better moral choice than leaving for another program. Like, I agree with kids wanting to leave to play. I think it's part of the story that's great is that he stayed.
I don't
agree with the people who say, and that's the right way to do it.
I think it was a good move for him to just kind of test the waters and see, well, maybe there will be a chance for him to start again at Alabama.
To me, I think that it was, he just said, this is the best place for me today, and I'm going to stay today. I don't know what that means, but I'll stay today. He ended up going to Oklahoma. Right. He ended up going in the end. He looked at it and said, yeah, you know what? This is Tua's place. I want to play. And in order for me to play, because let's be honest, would he be making $51 million a year if he had stayed at Alabama and just been behind Tua Tagovailoa for 2 years? Like if the last thing you saw of Jalen Hurts in college was being behind Tua Tagovailoa. Now, the thing was, he did come in and rescue Alabama in the SEC title game the next year because he was able to come into that game and provide a spark for the team when Tua got hurt. But that's one of the reasons why I support the transfer portal, because it gives players an opportunity, good players, an opportunity to go, hey, I gotta play. I have a career I want to think about. But I think part of what makes his story very Disney-like is losing that job and staying there and then saying, fine, now I'm going to leave. I've done my time. I had a redemptive moment at Alabama where I came into the next year I came in the SEC title game and lifted my team to a win. Then I go to Oklahoma. He becomes a Heisman candidate. He gets drafted in the second round by an Eagles team that had Carson Wentz and just decided to take him anyway. And look where he is today. So you and I have been doing the show for how long? 5 years?
Yeah.
5 years? We've been on the air the entire journey of Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
I mean, we talked about that national championship finals that happened with the benching. If I'm not mistaken, we might have been on a year later. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But around that time, we definitely remember him in college. We definitely saw he got drafted. And now we're watching this guy. He's the highest paid NFL player right now. That's going to change. But that's where he is right now. And that's a great story, man. That's a great, great story.
I agree with everybody who says this is a movie. What a movie.
Yeah. And like we said yesterday, too, I mean, I think you look at other quarterbacks around the league, you might want to look up Nicole Lynn.
Right? You know? Exactly.
I saw a story today that just I don't know if it's true or not, but the way she got in contact with Jalen Hurts was through Instagram DM.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean,
is that what we're using?
How we do things. That's how we do business now, Tony. It's like, you know, just DM somebody.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that is fantastic.
I mean, just throwing it out there, I guess, on a whim, and it's a huge payday for both of you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, and she's getting a lot of attention and a lot of praise for doing things, being able to negotiate things that no one else ever did with the Eagles.
Well, that, but it was quiet, right? Too, because I didn't even know there were negotiations going on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So good for her and good for Jalen Hurts to get this deal done. And good for Howie Roseman, because Howie Roseman was able to do something pretty remarkable, which was he was able to wheel and deal enough to shake up that roster enough that allowed him to build a team that won the NFC, made it to a Super Bowl, and allows this kind of deal to be done. 5 years, no trade clause, $179+ million guaranteed. It makes him the highest paid player in the NFL. He's got his quarterback. He paid his quarterback.
Yep.
He found out who it was, and he paid that individual. That's
great. And he locked him in.
Eric Edholm's going to join us in a few minutes. We'll talk more about that.
I mean, we always say that's the hardest position. That's the position that you need to take care of first.
That's right. That's right.
You know, everything else just kind of falls into place. And I don't think it's an astronomical deal either. I think it's a good deal.
Well, I think it falls in line with the increased salary cap, and mm-hmm. that's the projection of starting quarterback salaries now. It's going to be $50 million a year. It's going to be $60 million a year. And that's where it's going to be heading pretty soon. And when Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert get their contracts, it'll be more than what he gets.
Yeah, but does Lamar Jackson, is he in that realm?
See, that's the big story now. That's a big thing.
I don't think he is.
There's winners and losers here, and Lamar Jackson is the biggest loser of this process. Justin Herbert's going to get his money. Joe Burrow is going to get his money. They're going to be contracts probably exceeding what this is, because that's just the way it works. But the reality of it is Lamar Jackson has to take a step back and analyze this deal, analyze where he is realistically, and get back to the table with the Ravens to see what's happening, because it's not going to be a basically, he just needs to understand it really was a unicorn deal that's not going to be repeated. Eric Edholm next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Looking to hook up with Eric Edholm, NFL.com, on a progressive guest line this morning to not only talk about the Jalen Hurts deal, but the Lamar Jackson situation, all of those kind of things as the NFL keeps rolling along. Draft coming up next week. Eric Edholm joining us from NFL.com. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. I'm hanging in there. We got home stretch coming up here, so I'm pacing myself, you know.
Let's talk contracts. All right, what did this mean for Jalen Hurts? What does it mean not only for Jalen Hurts, but a group of quarterbacks on the side of we're getting deals, and one in particular in Lamar Jackson? Let's start with Lamar Jackson. What does this deal mean for him?
Yeah, I mean, it gives another big comp, obviously, another contract to which the Baltimore Ravens can theoretically go back to Lamar and say, you know, or Lamar can go back to them, depending on how you look at it, right? And just say, all right, here's more evidence of what these players are worth and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it obviously the considerations that come along with it, you know, are sometimes just as big. And, you know, I mean, the no trade deal, or the no trade clause, I should say, first ever in Eagles history, it's a pretty big, I don't want to say concession, but a pretty big element to this contract. And, you know, is that something Lamar wants? I don't know. We haven't been able to figure that part out yet. He's obviously got a pretty stringent list of demands, it appears. So So it obviously matters a lot to guys like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, possibly Tua Tagovailoa, the class of 2020 quarterbacks. Typically, the deals that follow are incrementally larger depending on the talent of the quarterback and all that and how they're viewed around the league. But, yeah, this thing has tentacles and outreach to a lot of different players, not named Jalen Hurts, but it certainly affects his future quite a bit. And I would have guessed he would have been the first. The Eagles are proactive, and, you know, Hurts probably felt like he still had something to prove. So I'm sure this is great from his perspective. But, yeah, fascinating deal league-wide as well.
People looking at Lamar Jackson saying, well, he's trying to blaze a trail here. Like, there's this outlying contract, but he's trying to be the second, because if you become the second, you can almost get to a point where it becomes the norm. If he doesn't get it, there might be other quarterbacks that are willing to do it, but do you think in the end that will happen in the near future? Will there be another quarterback that says, there's a soapbox here I want to stand on a little bit larger? I can get the deal, but I want a certain type of deal.
You're talking about
a fully guaranteed deal.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No, just the idea that if he's not going to be the trailblazer, there's got to be – is there somebody else going to come up and do it? Like, so that eventually it's not going to be just pushed away where that becomes the outlier and it never happens? Or is that a tough battle to – is that a tough hill to climb?
Yeah, I think NFL owners, like, you know, obviously they've been – some of them have been accused by people in my profession of – collusion, right, to prevent this from ever happening again. And, you know, I mean, we've seen it before, right? Kirk Cousins' deal was fully guaranteed, so it wasn't unprecedented, but the amount, and especially everything that Deshaun Watson had endured before that allegedly put himself through before that, all the charges against him, that's, I think, the element. Had Deshaun Watson played his season in whatever it was, 2020 or whatever, and, you know, was a great for a last place, terrible Texans team, and none of these allegations came up and he got that deal from Houston, I don't think anyone would be shocked by it. You say, well, here's a, you know, supreme young talent ascending, right? But the fact that it came after that certainly raised a ton of eyebrows and drew ire from around the league. So I don't know if it's totally avoidable, but I don't know if it's imminent to the point where, okay, that's going to be the industry norm. But we'll have a test here. I mentioned some of the guys like Burrow and Herbert who are, you know, had his talents. Eventually, Trevor Lawrence and other guys. I mean, we'll see how Justin Fields does this year and other young quarterbacks. But the more of them that play at this exceptional level, the more possible one of them says, we can't lose this guy. We have to do it this way. The more of those contracts that happen, the more likely it is to become the standard.
All right, let's get to the news about the Commanders being sold. What's the steps? Because people kind of look at this and go, okay, what's next? Where does it go from here? If there's a bid and it's accepted, then what happens?
Yeah, then it goes through sort of the ownership process. They have to sign off on it with a supermajority, and they have to, you know, go through the clearance. And, you know, I mean, it was when the Haslams bought the Browns, it was almost, you know, steamrolled through the process. And looking back now, maybe those some of those owners might say, hey, you know, there have been some issues here. Maybe we should slow this thing down a little bit. So there may be a little bit more scrutiny paid to Josh Harris, even though obviously he's a major sports owner, you know, visible in the billionaire, you know, cut of society, right? But yeah, I think obviously there's going to be background and vetting and making sure that everything is legal and adds up and all that. The last thing you want to do is get to the final stages and something is discovered out of place or in error or what have you, or there's some sort of thing that we weren't expecting. But yeah, it can go pretty quickly sometimes once we get to that phase of the next group of owners meeting. So I would say it's probably, I don't even remember when the next scheduled one is, but they can obviously call a special one to kind of get this thing fully finished off and over the finish line.
All right, one other story that's kind of been hanging around is Aaron Rodgers and the Jets and the Packers.
Yeah.
And we know that they're coming together, and we know that there's some obviously negotiations back and forth. Where do we stand? What do you hear about what maybe the sticking point is, why it hasn't been done? They don't have to do it today, but why hasn't it been done already?
It, it's very strange because rarely do you have a deal or a situation like this where you could look at it from one perspective or the other and try to make the argument that, oh, well, the Jets have the leverage here because the Packers, who else are they going to trade him to? They can't just leave this guy on the roster. He'd be a boat anchor and a huge distraction, right? Theoretically, and how ironic would this be after Rodgers didn't show up to OTAs last year, he could show up and be like, all right, boys, let's go. Let's get some football going, you know, and wouldn't that be so Aaron Rodgers to almost kind of thumb his nose at the whole process and create an issue here? Packers know that. I don't know if they're telling him stay away or, you know, if they've agreed he won't show up if there isn't a deal in place. But you could also argue that, look, the Jets are desperate too. Their fan base believes this guy is going to be their starting quarterback. They have cast their lot with Aaron Rodgers without a deal in hand. Joe Douglas the other day comes out and said, you know, in all, I don't remember, I'm paraphrasing, but basically like, we're going to get there, you know. And boy, I mean, if it doesn't happen, you think about especially that Jets franchise, which has, you know, kind of been the subject of jokes and ridicule for how they've bungled situations in the past, whether it's on the field or negotiations or, you know, letting Belichick go, whatever you want to say. I mean, they have a history of messing things up, right? And so if you're the Jets, the last thing you want to do is have a dozen eggs on your face after this thing and say, well, didn't work out. Guess we'll find somebody else. You know, you don't even have Mike White anymore. I mean, right. So I made a call last night to somebody who's not on either team but would have a good idea of what's going on and just sort of said, is it possible we get to draft day and nothing has happened yet? And he's like, oh, it's possible, sure. What, you know, especially if the Packers are asking for a first-round pick and they're like, just say, well, no, we're not giving you a first-round pick. We don't even know if he's going to retire after next year. So I think we still have some work to do here, and it could happen 5 hours before the draft. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen in between rounds one and two, you know, and involve 2 second-round picks maybe. It could involve 24 picks. I have no idea. I mean,
that's a great point. What if we get to draft day and there's no deal and the Packers are like wanting something in this draft and days are clicking and then they go, great, we got nothing this year for Aaron Rodgers. We were kind of hoping we'd get a second round pick on Friday and now Friday's gone.
I think that scenario is actually fairly likely where the Packers hold out till the very last moment and say, we want a first, we want a first. Jets say no, Jets say no, Jets say no. We get to the round one, Jets select Broderick Jones or whoever, you know, at 13. And then all of a sudden overnight the Packers go, okay, you didn't give us the first, but we'll take those two, what is it, 42 and 43. I don't remember the exact numbers. But they have back-to-back picks, you know, early to mid-second round. You know, they may dig in and say, fine, you got that one, but we got to get something back. So I think that's a scenario that we can't overlook. I think it's possible.
Great point. Eric, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Have a great morning. See you
soon. Got it. Eric Hedholm, NFL.com. Always good stuff. Always love having Eric on. Great stuff. We'll talk more about that coming up. Again, we'll get back to the NBA playoffs and the stomp of Draymond Green. Do you think a suspension is coming for game 3. We'll talk more about that as the hour rolls along. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's as we continue along. So thanks to Eric Hedholm, who I always like coming on the show, talk a little NFL. So, I am very curious to see how this Aaron Rodgers situation plays out.
I mean, I feel like there's a countdown now. There's a clock, 9 days.
He made a great point at the beginning. He said, okay, here's a deal, right? That benefits everybody, right? Everybody benefits. It's not there's no reluctancy on anybody's part. Aaron Rodgers wants to play for the Jets. the Jets want to have him play quarterback for them, and the Packers want him to play quarterback for the Jets.
Perfect.
Right? Perfect. And they can't figure this out. So you get closer to, like we were saying, you get closer to the draft. If there's any currency that the Packers want in 2023, they may not get it. The draft may come and go, and the Jets go, yeah, we never came to an agreement. That's not going to change the urgency of the Packers to want Aaron Rodgers off the books, the Jets to want Aaron Rodgers on the books, and for Aaron Rodgers to be in a new uniform. But the draft may come and go, and the Jets may not budge on anything, and next thing you know, it came and went, and now the Packers get their stuff in 2024. They may want something now. They may want. They might go, hey, you know what? In the end, we kind of want a player today. So, yeah, while it's fun to look at the future, we kind of want a player today. But, there is a small sense of what if it doesn't work out. I have a hard time buying that. I have a hard time buying that. For example, there's been conversation with the Jets draft a quarterback in round one if they felt like if the deal wasn't coming together in time. That would be a stupid thing to do. I don't find the argument dumb or a waste of time. I mean, I think there is a legitimate feeling of like, if you're the Jets and you feel like it's not going your way, you do need a quarterback. But think of it as a level of percentage, right? Like, you know how you've got those risk people in insurance agencies, kind of like Ben Stiller's character in Along Came Polly. Remember where he always had percentages of like, don't eat the peanuts at a bar, like don't go skydiving, like things like that. It's you would have to, if you're the Jets, you would have to look at it as a percentage. How close are we in these negotiations to landing Aaron Rodgers? In the end, is it just a small thing here or there that can be worked out? If that's the case, then you would say, why would I put Aaron Rodgers in a similar situation in New York that he's leaving Green Bay for? Like, why would I draft a quarterback in round one when I'm trying to land Aaron Rodgers? I'm almost admitting to Aaron Rodgers that I think you won't be doing this in 2 years. And Aaron Rodgers may go, I might be thinking 5 more years. Like, you don't know what I'm thinking. I might think 2 years. I might think 1 year. I might think 5 years. But if you draft that first round quarterback, I don't really want that around. I don't want to be hanging around a team that's got a number one quarterback that they drafted with the 13th pick or whatever it is. I don't need this. Like, you'd have to weigh the percentages. If we're 75% sure we're going to land Aaron Rodgers, then you don't put that on your draft team to get a QB. That's ridiculous. You get Aaron Rodgers, and then you see where that goes, and then when it's time to get a new quarterback, you figure out how to get a new quarterback. But you don't get a new quarterback today. You build a team around Aaron Rodgers. You give him everything you possibly can to be the best team in the next two years to win a Super Bowl. 1 year or 2 years to win a Super Bowl. But it's still interesting. It's not going to be about that. It's going to be about Friday and Saturday in terms of the picks that are on the board. It's going to be what do the Packers want on Friday, right? Like, do they want a second round pick? Yeah, they're going to probably want a second round pick. If Friday comes and goes, then the Packers don't get that. So that to me is interesting, but I'm not in the state of urgency. I want it done because I want the story to be complete, because I just want to get to the real, like the, rather than the speculative nature of it. I kind of want to know how the story ends up.
Of course.
But if I'm the Jets and the Packers, there's no urgency to do this. There's only urgency if the Packers are hell-bent on getting something next week.
Well, and I think they are. I think they want to see a return immediately. Or they want to have like a toy to play with immediately. You know? Like,
I do too.
Like if you're a kid, you want something just tangible in your hand. Somebody might say to you, it's like, oh, I'm putting this money away from you, but you know, your kid's like, no, but I want the baseball bat in my hand now.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't get why, you know, yeah, it's there, it's being shipped to me, or I have to go, I want it now. And I think there's going to be a part of that for the Packers. Like, you know, hey, we want a draft pick this year.
Yeah, we want something today.
Because
you
know, like, if not,
give us something to next year as part of the package, but we kind of want something today.
Because I have a feeling, too, that this is going to be such a crazy deal in terms of the language and the deal because of, you know, Aaron Rodgers already flirted with retirement once. What happens?
You definitely need protection if you're the Jets.
What happens after four games if he's like, just kidding. I can't do this anymore.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't put it past Aaron to do that. That's the problem.
If he doesn't like it.
For the Packers, it's like we want something now so we get something now just in case that is to happen. Where if the Jets were like, everything's on 2024 and he retires after four games, well, that null and voided everything.
Right. So I agree with you. I think there's something about the next 10 days or something,
nine days
is really going to turn the heat up in the conversation between the two teams. Because, like you said, if there is something that the Packers want today, well, they can't get it if the day comes and goes. Right. That's it. If Friday comes and goes, there's no deal for Aaron Rodgers. Then they got to look to 2024.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go back on. I'm going to say 10 days because I really don't think Aaron is worth or the Jets are going to give up a first rounder for this.
No,
year's draft.
I'm with you. I don't think so either.
It could be Friday. They have until Friday that second rounder, third rounder. But I mean, again, it's like. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's a future Hall of Famer. Is he only worth like a couple second rounders?
And here's the other thing, too. I think the Jets have to walk this line of, I know you obviously want to put together the best possible deal without any drawbacks, but I also think that the fan base now has been chomping at the bit just to get this guy in, that if it costs you an extra pick that you're uncomfortable giving away, like in the third round or something, I would put the move on that and say, yeah, okay, let's just do it. Yeah, this may not be the best deal we can negotiate, but we have to get Aaron Rodgers on this team in some way, shape, or form. And so if we give a little bit more than we wanted, and we didn't quite get that what if he retires deal worked out the exact way we wanted it, give a little bit because the fan base is dying to see this deal done. They are dying to see this deal. They're smart enough to know that the way this team is structured right now, as talented as it is, has zero quarterback under center that is not going to work in an AFC loaded with talented QBs. Like, in order for the Jets to be in a conversation in the AFC, Aaron Rodgers has to be under center. So if you give a little bit, you never would admit this, but if your own room privately, you just go, we'll give a little bit if they push. We'll say yes. Because you've got to make this happen. Otherwise, you're wasting all the talent around you when you look around and go, all right, Zach Wilson again, or do we want to find some bum, 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 bum veteran QB who's coming looking for a job? Like, you don't want that. You want Aaron Rodgers. Spend draft night with our friends at VSiN. Their experts will be breaking down every pick and trade, as well as look for live betting values across the board. You'll hear from former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, Super Bowl champion quarterback Sean King, and the VSiN betting experts. You catch all of the action beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern on April 27th on the Sports Map Radio Network. All right, so again, we will have that draft coverage for you coming up.
We're going to be talking about it crazily,
crazily
this week and next.
Analyzing all the mock drafts.
You know what I thought
was
fascinating? I don't remember what I was watching yesterday, but ABC has an ad for it right now
for the draft.
Yes,
yeah,
and it just I don't know why that hit me kind of different yesterday when I saw it. Where you know it was just you know with the first pick. You know they're doing that whole thing, and then it was. You know, it's you always dream of having your name called, and then your name is called, and it's like very emotional, like pulling at the heartstrings. But I was just like, oh my God, this is network television that I am seeing this commercial on right now.
It's why. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It wasn't probably. I mean, I've seen we've seen commercials for watching ESPN or NFL Network. They'll show that, but this was network television.
Yeah, and it's funny how network TV, like ABC, wants to kind of put more stuff on ESPN, almost like they get an opportunity to decide.
Yeah.
So the good stuff goes on ABC, like in the basketball playoffs and whatnot, in a Saturday game. But a primetime thing is now, like, this is such, I mean, this is so big. They're like, ABC, yeah, here we go.
This is being advertised like the Oscars.
Exactly. It's wild. It's crazy. All right, hour two coming up as we continue on Wake Up Call.